to celebrate the greatest team sport known to man, where modern-day gladiators collide all for the glory of the gridiron. We'll talk some college football on Cougar Sports with Ben Criddle.
Yeah, buddy. Welcome back. Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. This is Cougar Country. I'm Ben Criddle, broadcasting live from our Wasatch Medical Clinic, wasatchmedicalclinic.com studios. Darnell Dixon, Double D, the Daily Heraldian by my side. We're going to get into another college football segment. Going to be brought to you by Fat Daddy's. We're going to be live at Fat Daddy's tomorrow, eating some pizza, some delicious pizza. I'm going to be chowing down on a Maverick, a little spicy, a little meatballs on there, and some jalapenos and pepperoncinis. That's how I live. Double D, you going to stop by, hang out with us? G-Man's going to be there.
Well, if he's willing to share some pizza.
Man. Oh, yeah. No, we've got 8 free garlic knots for you, too, man. Okay. You mentioned ESPN 960 coming, you get 8 free garlic knots. What's your go-to? Yours is Gurney likes Frankie One Eye.
Tri-Carne.
Tri-Carne is where it's at. So stop by the new Orem location, in fact. So Fat Daddy's.
Very much closer to me, I'm happy.
Pizzeria.com. You can get some gelato as well. They got gelato. I like gelato. You like gelato. We all like gelato. All right, let's talk some college football in this segment with a former college football player, former BYU commit. And then he served a mission. He saw the light. He's like, you know what? I want to dabble in the red. I want to play for the University of Utah. Became an all-time great for the Utes. Played in the NFL as well. Now he's just making money in the sales world. Let's welcome in Jake Murphy to the show. What's up, Jake?
What's up, guys? How's it going? Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for hopping on. It's been too long, Jake. It's been too long. And I got to give credit to Double D, Darnell Dixon, because every time I was like, hey, you know, when he's coached, like, I was like, who do you want to interview today? He's like, I really want to interview Jake Murphy. I'm like, he's a Ute. We don't want to bring on Utes to the dang show, okay? You don't want to give them a platform. He's like, I just love Jake Murphy, and I just want to talk to him about NIL and all these things. I'm like, all right, we're going to get Jake on. I'm back from my vacation to the happiest place on earth, the most expensive place on earth, Disneyland. So we got to bring Jake on. Jake, this is my first question for you, though. Before we get into NIL talk, and I hand the mic over to Darnell so he can pelt you with a bunch of preguntas, a lot of questions here. So BYU is making the move to the Big 12. And I put out this question. It's got a lot of traction amongst BYU fans and Big 12 fans alike. I asked, you know, BYU fans are all about love, I think. They don't like enmity. They don't like hate unless it's Utah fans, right? But I asked the question, like, which fan base and or team do you think BYU fans will despise the most? No one's going to replace the hate that they have for Utah fans, but there's going to be a team in the Big 12 that BYU fans dislike more than the others, and their fans are going to be the driving reason more than likely. What team has it been for Utah, right? Mountain West, WAC, it was always BYU. They made the move to the Pac-12. Which team do Utah fans hate the most in the Pac-12 currently, and why?
Oh, that's a great question. I think, I think originally when we first jumped into the Pac-12, they kind of tried to push the Colorado stuff on us. And it just felt unnatural, right? I think naturally the way things are going outside of BYU, which, you know, a lot of Utah fans will deny, they still very much have that passionate dislike for them as a football group. Which I don't deny. I think you see that. But for me, it's clearly USC right now. I think USC kind of represents everything Utah doesn't, right? I think USC is obviously, people flock there. They have a ton of money. They can buy recruits. They can do this and that. And they kind of just, you know, cherry pick the hottest coach in the market to come there. And Utah, on the other hand, is kind of built from the ground up with Coach Witt and almost a blue collar type. Attitude, in a way, I guess you could say. And then not to mention, no one really, even the past 2 years that Utah's won it, I don't think a lot of people just don't really feel they've been as good as they really are, and I think they feel that. So for me, it's got to be USC. I can feel the sense of dislike towards USC. And it for me, growing up, geez, I'm getting pulled in all over places because I was a Reggie Bush bandwagon fan, and I remember watching USC Texas in my USC jersey. So it's funny now looking back and seeing all this. But that's who I would say. I'd say USC for sure.
Yeah, so prognosticate for me. BYU's jumping into the Big 12. You have some new members as well. I don't know if you can pick Texas and Oklahoma just because they're not going to be around. They're out, OU and UT, so they're on the outs. But who do you think BYU fans are going to struggle with in the Big 12. And I asked the question, like, who, which fan base is most like the Utah fan base when it's all said and done?
Oh, man, that's a tough one because, like, I look through the Big 12 and there's not that many dislikable programs other than the kind of – naturally, you kind of hate the people at the top who are leaving. So, sure. I mean, Texas and Oklahoma, obviously. TCU is obviously doing amazing. But it's hard for me to say because I'm such an outsider to the Big 12, and I look at every program. Even programs like, let's just pick, like, geez, I don't know, Baylor. BYU might not be the biggest fans of Baylor, right? They have a few ex – I think, correct me if I'm wrong, obviously an ex-coordinator, a few ex-O-linemen went there. But then at the same time, you kind of respect them. Like, even when BYU beat Baylor – so you can tell me if I'm wrong, but given the fact that BYU beat Baylor this past year, there's always been a good game, and now Baylor, I feel like, kind of dipping their toes in the BYU water, I could see that kind of boiling up to something. That being said, as a, you know, not a Big 12 enthusiast necessarily, so many of these programs are respectable. As far as, like, you know, it just doesn't seem like there's a ton of slimy programs. Like, maybe Texas would qualify for them, but they're obviously leaving. So I'll go with Baylor. That's who I'm going to say. I believe they – didn't they pull one of BYU's top O-line?
Yeah, I mean, but two offensive linemen. They got two. They got Caleb Lohner on the basketball team. They offered Gabe Judy Lally after he entered the transfer portal, like the first offer. It's like, hey, that's our cornerback. Boom. Oh, okay. Let's get him.
That confirms it. I'm choosing Baylor. That's who I think they're going to go after.
I like the take. Now, obviously, it's going to be Baylor until, you know, the Pac-12 disintegrates and Utah finds itself in the Big 12, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, that's bound to happen. So once that happens, look, if that happens, that would be epic. I would be all for it. That'd be fun to watch. I would love to watch BYU and Utah in a Power 5 conference together go at it. That would be awesome.
It truly would be a magical time. Darnell Dixon by my side. We got Jake Murphy, former BYU commit and University of Utah great tight end, talking some football here, talking NIL. Now, Double D has loved your perspective. Now, Double D does not like NIL. He does not like the corruption and the transfer portal and everything that made college football great. It's ruined now. It's never going to be the same. And he loves your perspective on this. So, Darnell, I'm going to let you ask your questions now after I got my selfish questions out of the way.
Well, with that intro, thanks a lot, Ben.
So you know it's true. You know it's true. He'll act like he does. Like, oh, no, I think it's good for the student athlete. No, he hates it. He hates it.
If I want to be treated like a king in my own home, I have to hate it because my wife hates it even more than I do. But so,
like
Jake,
that.
Jake, I know it's changed since you played in college football, and the main things that have changed have been the NIL and the transfer portal. And what caught my attention was a tweet you sent out a month or so ago about your own personal experience and how you wouldn't have stayed at Utah after you were benched your freshman year had the transfer portal been available. Or NIL, I guess, would also be an influence. So I wanted you to kind of go over that thought process, kind of what happened to you and how you view what kids are going through now, and they're missing out on maybe some of the adversity that shapes and builds people.
Yeah, good question. Yeah, in reference to that tweet, you know, 100%, I think if the transfer portal was so easy to access back when I was there, I was thinking back to, like, what year was that? My redshirt freshman year, I kind of had a breakout game against BYU, struggled a little bit, got benched, never played again towards the end of the season. And I think that kind of as a selfish, you know, redshirt freshman who thinks, you know, they can dominate the world, I honestly think, yeah, I would have popped up in the transfer portal and said, hey, you know, who might value me most? Because when you're in your hardest parts in college, you're going to think about, hey, will so-and-so like me more? Is the grass greener on the other side? And if that were the process for me, I think I would have lost out on exponential growth that I saw while I was fighting that adversity of trying to beat out, you know, two really good tight ends who were older than me up into my sophomore year. So it's a double-edged thing, right? Because I think this is one of those situations where you can say multiple things are true, right? I think college players need to have access to move on to other programs. I think that's true. I think college athletes need to be able to benefit off their own money. I think that, or benefit off their own name and image. I think that's true. But I also think it's true that we need to somewhat, whether it be a salary cap or a financial audit on the program, or whether you make a player have some sort of repercussion. Maybe he can't see NIL money for a year if he does use the transfer portal. I think there needs to be processes put in place to kind of dial it down. So I think that might, people might find that surprising, because I'm such a huge advocate for the player too. And I think really my main message always has been, hey, coaches can do this, so why can't players do this? But just, it's just a logistical nightmare. And I think in the process of that, I think we're seeing that a lot of players are taking easy outs. And in hindsight, I can see in 5 years from now, you know, I'm sure there's going to be data or whatever showing how effective the transfer portal is. But I think what a lot of teams are going to find out is that really the transfer portal isn't a great place to recruit. Obviously, you're going to have some 5-stars and 4-stars who are, you know, top of the line. You go pick them out of there. But to me, the transfer portal is going to kind of start to build up to be this place of where players really just want an easy out. And that's kind of what I was alluding to in that tweet is, hey, if I was given the opportunity to transfer every time something was hard, I would have never turned into a good ball player. So it's a weird thing. It's one of those things with the NIL, the transfer portal, all this stuff that is, it's really the Wild West right now. And I think in the end, it's going to be for the better. But I also think they're going to come down with some sort of regulation, because there's got to be some sort of process in place so it's not so crazy out there. So I know that doesn't really answer the question direct, because I think it's both good and bad. I'd love to keep it there. But I'd also love to see a place for these kids to make smart decisions and not just jump around all the time.
Well, Jake, let me dial it down or dial it into your decisions. I mean, you stayed. You could have looked to go elsewhere, but at that point you would have had to sit out a year. What things did you learn about yourself going through the process of playing and then getting benched and then realizing, hey, I got to do something about this, right?
Yeah, I think the most valuable thing I learned was hard work. I think two situations in my life that I'll always look back on that really taught me hard work was my LDS mission. I would have always been a lazy kind of entitled kid, honestly, if I never went on that. And then my redshirt freshman year when I was benched, I really learned how to work hard. And that was the true first, really the first time in my whole sporting career that I'd faced true adversity. And that will make you a better ball player. And I think that's what a lot of the kids are missing out on, is you have this dopamine hit when you throw your name into the transfer portal and all of a sudden you go relive that recruiting process again. And you think everyone wants you and everyone loves you. But then the reality is, once you sign on that dotted line, you're probably still going to be in another position battle. I mean, rarely ever are you going to waltz in and start, right? So the main thing I learned was hard work. I think in the aggregate, it was a good thing for me. And I think that it gave me a good chance to realize, this sounds weird, but it gave me a good chance to realize what's important. So it kind of pulled me back a little bit. I was a little more grounded of a person. I think everyone needs to be humbled, and that's what happened to me then. And without that lesson, I certainly wouldn't have the mindset or be where I'm at in my life today. So it was really valuable for me, that's for sure.
I love that perspective, Jake. I wholeheartedly agree. The quicker you can experience adversity and learn how to kind of push through it and fight through it and compete through it, the better off you are in this freaking world. And I've asked this question before, like, how do you, because it keeps me up at night, because I have kids now. I have a kid and I have another one on the way, man. I'm excited. I want to have a bunch of kids and raise them the right way, but I know I'm going to mess up, right? And how do you create adversity in a world that has little to no adversity? How do you like inflict adversity on your children with little to no adversity anywhere?
Yeah, adversity to them is, the internet's not working.
Oh my god!
Yeah, exactly.
Heavens.
Well, if you're asking me for parenting advice, I don't know if I can help you there. But
I need it, Jake. I need it.
No, I always say, the older we get and the more kids we have, we're like, we're adults are kind of just winging it, aren't they? No one really knows what we're doing. But I think that's true. And I think it applies to football too. It's like, it's not real true adversity if you're a full ride scholarship kid and you were benched for a game and your coach chewed you out. If you're going to run away now in life after getting benched, I'm sorry, but there's going to be multiple times in the future where you're going to run away and try to avoid all adversity. So I don't know the answer about the kids, but I do know that adversity is good. I can confirm that, and it never seems good in the moment, but in hindsight, it's always something that makes you better.
Jake Murphy here on ESPN 960. I want to pivot a little bit. I was telling Darnell growing up, I played RBI baseball, and I always choose the fighting Dale Murphys to hit dingers. I was just hitting dingers with Dale all day. He had 44 home runs. He like batted at like 300, I think, on those stats that were on RBI baseball, and he's not in the Hall of Fame yet, and it's a travesty. Give us an update on things that are going down, and do you think this is the year?
Yeah, good question. So yesterday, Scott Rolen, you know, one of my favorite players growing up, third baseman for the Phillies, got voted in. And, you know, I sent out a tweet that, you know, quote unquote, where I don't know, it didn't go viral. I don't know what technically is viral, but a lot of people seem to think it was interesting, too. And Scott Rolen had very similar stats to my dad. Now, he didn't play the same position as him, and his wins above replacement. So you'll see the statistic war, you'll see that thrown out all the time when you talk about Hall of Fame voting. So really the Hall of Fame came into this, they're in a little bit of a crossroads, because it's like, all right, we got all these really good players who are doing steroids, and then we got all these other really good players. So what do we do? Like, what are the categories that we need to focus on? So apparently a lot of the voters focus on this war. They focused on wins above replacement, right? Which obviously other sports use that too. It's an important stat. So his war isn't high enough, bottom line, right? I'm biased, but I'm not blind, right? So I can see where he's lacking. So his war comes in at, as you referenced, about 42. The average Hall of Famer is about 50 to 70. So Scott Rolen, really the only stat he was clearly better in was war. So the question I threw out was, hey, at what point did we decide we value war more than MVPs? Because, you know, my dad has two, Scott Rolen has none. There's so many examples. There's other players from the 70s and 80s, too, where I could be like, you know, this person should be in. Lou Whitaker is a name. I mean, Don Mattingly. Yeah. Kenny Lofton's a guy who had such great war, but he's not in. So there's situations, it's just not consistent is all I'm getting at. There's some players who are in with bad war. There's some players who are out with good war. So where we're at now is, I mean, he doesn't, you know, look into it as much as me and the kids and my mom do. I mean, and his fans. But I think he has a good shot. Really, he's on what's called the Veterans Committee list right now. So he has to wait three more years. The bar, geez, 2023 now. So he has to wait two more years. And then his time will come around again, which I think he has a good shot of getting in his life. I think we're all very optimistic that it's going to happen. He has, you know, people from the Hall of Fame reach out to him all the time and say, look, we're doing all we can to get you in. So we're very optimistic. He's optimistic. I know he would love it. Obviously, his fans would. And I think he deserves it. You know, all bias aside, I think he deserves it. So that's a little rundown on the kind of the controversy in the voting process. Is it's just really inconsistent, and we aren't really, I'm not really sure, you know, how they vote, what they vote on specifically, because it's pretty inconsistent.
Yeah. Well, I saw Dale recently at Chubby's Cafe. We were eating burgers and beer battered fries and just enjoying life. I saw your wonderful mother as well, and it was great catching up with them. But for many young LDS males that grew up playing sports, we looked up to individuals like Dale Murphy that went out and competed and did it the right way. Wally Joyner, right? I looked up to Danny Ainge. And you look at these high-level Latter-day Saint men that are, you know, doing great things in the community and also doing great things in sports, and you begin to have dreams and visions of what you could accomplish and your respect just for basketball, football, baseball, whatever it may be. And so I'm biased as well. Much of my memory growing up watching Major League Baseball, I was always tuning into what Dale Murphy was doing and how he was playing. And I mentioned my RBI baseball thing. So I'm rooting him on, man. I can't wait to see him inducted. I think, as you mentioned, it's not if, it's when. Hopefully it's sooner rather than later because, you know, Dale's trying to get a little bit old, man. I know he's still got some vigor and vim, but we got to – make sure he's able to enjoy being a Hall of Famer for as long as possible while he's on this green earth.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I know. I make that joke to him sometimes. I'm like, look, maybe this is a grim joke. So for those who don't like dark humor, you might not like it. But I'd say, hey, maybe you got to pass away just to get in. That's the key to it, I guess, because it's happened to a few guys he rolled around with. So we'll see what happens. You know, he obviously doesn't think about it nearly as much as someone like me does. But we're optimistic. I'm optimistic. It's either way, you know, life's great. He's doing great. So we'll keep pulling for him.
Jake Murphy, ladies and gentlemen. Jake, anything else that's been on your mind in regards to sports, athletics, football? Obviously, Utah had a great season. BYU fans didn't like watching them play well.
Yeah.
They did like watch them losing in the Rose Bowl. But I was like, well, they still made it to the Rose Bowl back-to-back. So, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, anything else that's been on your mind?
Yeah, good question. You know, it's funny. I have a group of friends. You know, we have a group text. Most of them BYU fans. We call it the thread, right? It's just where we talk about sports, and I find that I talk about BYU sports more than I do Utah sports, unfortunately. But my one hot take before I jump off, I don't know how much time I have that we can dive into another time, is that I think the NIL is ideal for programs like BYU. So that was my latest hot take in the thread. And I thought I'd throw it out here too. Not to name anyone by name, but there's a few alumni up there at BYU who I think if you can get creative with the NIL, I think there's finally a chance to get on even playing ground with a lot of these other schools who've been doing this forever. There's some Pac-12 schools that have been paying players forever, some Big 12, some SEC. And now that it's legal, quote unquote, and now that there's a few billionaires, whatever you want to call them, BYU alumni. That's my hot take for you. So I think BYU could really benefit from the NIL, and I'm excited to watch what they do with all this new stuff they're doing, because there's LDS recruits out there. I mean, we see them roll around every now and then. The Ben Olsons, the Tanner Mangums, the five stars, blue chip recruits who are LDS. And if BYU can start paying them some money, I know it might get a little sticky with, because obviously you got the church and stuff like that, but they can figure that part of it out. I think they can really benefit from the NIL. So that's my hot take for you.
Yeah, I think it's an intriguing theory. BYU was at the forefront doing some outside-the-box thinking and execution as it related to NIL right off the bat, with their Built for Life program, with the Built Bar deal. I thought that was tremendous. One element that I think you're familiar with, you know the culture pretty well. I would say BYU fans do not spend their money frivolously, and they typically always want to see the return on investment. And I mean, I see that everywhere. Like, there's stupid money. There's big money and there's stupid money. Stupid money is oil money, where it's never going away. It's like generational oil money in the Big 12. There's generational stupid money in the SEC. They value winning at football, like deep down, intrinsically rooted into their communities, that I don't know if BYU has that. I want to believe that they do. I think those are the two elements that I don't think BYU has within their fan base, because they've also been ridiculously spoiled over the last 50 years. Top 10 in wins in the last 50 years. They're averaging 8 to 9 wins a season. So there's this, well, we should win, right? We overachieve. We may not recruit better there, but we always overachieve. That's the Mormon way. Right, we overachieve. There's a lot of culture there of hard work, diligence, patience, discipline, all those things that set you up for success in life and in football. So, those would be my counter arguments to you. I think they'll be competitive. Right now, they're a lower level G5 in the NIL world. Let's talk about basketball just for a second here, and then I want to get your thoughts. I don't think, for instance, BYU basketball is going to out NIL Texas Tech or Baylor or any one of these Big 12 schools that love sport and love basketball. Like, we saw BYU miss out on a number of recruits that they were swinging for. Some people say, well, it's due to honor code, or it's due to academics, maybe. It's a tough academic school, and these people just want to focus on sport. These athletes want to focus on sports. Others would say, hey, like, it's strictly NIL. What like allotment of cash Benjamins can you put in the bag? And I just don't see like donors with stupid money saying, yeah, here's 100K for the semester. Come on now. I just don't see it. That's not the BYU LDS way. It's just not.
I guess in my opinion, the biggest roadblock is, and this may come off as not very, what's the word? Not sacrilegious. I don't know what it is, but I think the church might be a hurdle for it all, right? I think, I don't know how the finances end up going there. I think obviously being a church institution, there's more restrictions and things like that, but and maybe teach me on this too. I don't know how much time we have, but with NIL, what's to stop a booster? Let's say, you know, Joe Williams, who just created the biggest software company in the world, and he's a BYU alumni, and he's already donating $20 million to the athletic program. Let's say, I don't know any. Yeah. This is just all hypothetical.
Yeah.
Does BYU have anyone in place who's saying, okay, out of that $20 million, we're going to have $3 million of that's going to be allocated to the NIL. We want them to come work for your software company. We'll set up the contracts. We'll do this. We'll do that. Is that illegal for NIL or is that legal? I guess that's my main question.
Well, all of
that might determine how I think about this.
Yeah. Like, you know, we talk about this like all the time on the show. We get into this kind of this muck. And so I would say the verbiage is interesting, right? Because legal, this is another thing that BYU fans struggle with and maybe even Utah fans struggle with. The legality of it all from the laws of the land state that capitalism is king and the right to work is
free market system.
Yeah. You cannot tell Jake Murphy, sorry, Jake, you can't take that cash. But in enters the NCAA with their antitrust policies and say, no, you can't do that. We don't have a system in place of like unionization, right? We don't have like this union that everyone's agreed to and everyone's under this umbrella that is protected, that we can prohibit you from receiving cash, right? There's not anything like that, like the NFL would have with unions and things of that nature in this NFL committee of ownership. So we don't have that. So legally, it's completely legal for a BYU Joe Williams to spend $20 million on the next Jabari Parker or the next Danny Ainge or the next Frank Jackson. Like, we want all the why wouldn't you want the best LDS recruits representing the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints institution, right? That's the idea behind it. Wouldn't you want that? Is it a positive thing? You know, some people say yes, some people say no. It's kind of like the idea of, like, should everyone move to highly populated Mormon communities or should they expand out? Anyway, I digress, but that is kind of at the root of it. It's proper. Or it's improper is what I'm getting. NCAA bylaws say it's improper to pay for play, but still collectives are out there enticing people to do it because it's actually legal to do that. And so,
yeah, I mean,
but the church would say, hey, we don't hear no evil, speak no evil, see no evil. We don't want to be associated with the appearance of evil and corruption, even though the evil and corrupt is the NCAA. But there is a dichotomy. There's got to be this dichotomy, like shift. This perspective shift, and we're not there yet within the LDS community, and we're not within the conservative community of Utah. We're not there yet, and there's got to be a lot of education involved in that because, once again, if BYU is associated with that, like let's say they're pay for play and they come under scrutiny, any anti-Mormon, any anti-BYU entity will say, see, I told you so. They're corrupt. They're horrible. They're self-righteous. They do. They're white-collar crime or criminals. You know, I mean, whatever their confirmation bias is, it's very easy to say that's who they are. I knew it. So the appearances and avoiding those scandals is important. I'm not saying like I agree with that, but like you get the you got to be very careful about how you approach it if you're BYU.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the church aspect of it is kind of what I was when I referred to it as a hurdle. I figured it was that much kind of the marketing and imaging behind it. But I mean, I could totally see it's going to be the norm. I mean, I can tell you right now, there's a number of programs and players I've talked to in the Pac-12, Big 12, who I still talk to, And a lot of players are making $500,000 that you wouldn't expect are making $500,000. I mean, even at BYU, some of the things I've heard for what players make there, I was shocked. So I think it's just going to become more and more of the norm. My hopes, if I was a BYU fan, would be that everyone realizes this is the norm, then you can utilize that cash in a good way. But obviously, I see what you mean there. It's tough. I think that's the challenge BYU always faces, right? It's a unique school. It's a unique, with the honor code and the church, for better or for worse, right? I think people like us would say it's a great thing, right? It's, you know, standards we love and standards we appreciate, but people who are only looking at recruit rankings probably think it's a bad thing. So it's a hard place to recruit at. We'll see what happens, but that was my plug to tell Kalani if he wants anyone to ever try and get creative with the NIL at BYU to give me a call. So if you ever see Kalani or any of the coaches, just let them know. I don't care if it's BYU. I like to see college players make some money. So that's my
plug. I do too. No, I'm right there with you. Hey, this is my kind of final thought that we'll kind of end the interview with. But so I have brothers that they're not fans of BYU at all, right? We didn't grow up. It's funny you mentioned USC as your team growing up. My dad's from Long Beach, right? Where's Dale from again originally? Where was he born and raised?
He's Oregon, actually. Oregon.
Okay, so I don't know how you became a USC fan. You know, obviously Reggie Bush and
Bandwagon.
Yeah, and that's okay. You know what I mean? My dad is from SoCal, went to Long Beach, he went to Wilson High in Long Beach. And so we grew up, he went to BYU, and I never heard him talk about BYU ever. So I grew up a USC fan of all things, right? You know, Rose Bowls and all this stuff, right? It's kind of interesting kind of how it all kind of, you know, kind of plays out. But anyway, what I'm getting at is, BYU, you know, I ended up at BYU. It was great. It was marvelous. It was a dream come true for me to play college football. There are, as I mentioned, some weaknesses and chinks in the armor. Now, if let's say, for example, Jake Murphy coming out of high school, right, is getting recruited by BYU, Utah, all these different schools. And let's say that BYU is the church institution, right? The church-sponsored institution says, we really want to highlight the best Latter-day Saint recruits, and we would love if they went to BYU to represent their faith. And we want to celebrate, in essence, some sort of like marketing and advertising of the faith through great athletics, supreme athletics, right? And they were willing to incentivize to get the best recruits there to take care of them, right? To say, hey, we want to create long-term earning potential for you, Jake, because you're such a great athlete and you served a mission. You're an ambassador of the faith. We want you to be an ambassador of the football team as a flag bearer of the university and a flag bearer of the faith. My brothers, I'm telling you right now, would be livid. Even though they're very active, engaged in their callings, they would be livid if that was the church's approach. And I think the same thing would happen for many Utah fans that are active members of the church. Want to get your perspective on that, even though it's like, okay, well, it's like, wait, we're celebrating the Latter-day Saint, you know, missionaries. If the church is willing to pay those recruits top dollar to make sure that they are taken care of for a long time, that they have a network that is, you know, the Mormon Mafia network, right? I'm kidding. But you know what I mean by that? It's like, we're going to make sure that these Latter-day Saint football players, Latter-day Saint athletes are taken care of, and that hopefully they, you know, stay true to the faith. They celebrate the morals, the moral ethics and that we celebrate within the church and also within the university. I think it would be interesting. Now, this is all theoretical. It's not going to happen. But what if, and what would the reaction be? I think people may be going inactive.
Yeah, it'll be a bad fallout. I mean, there's two things would happen. Members of the church would freak out, but also if the church could pay recruits, man, it would be over. BYU would win every national title ever because they'd be offering $10 million per scholarship. No, I think it's interesting. I think people who do think like that, right? I think you deal with a little bit of that actually at every university, not just the church. There's a little bit of athletes have it a little too easy. This isn't fair. You know, I'm a student here. I'm trying to, you know, make my career. But the bottom line is everyone's in a different situation. And yeah, like you said, if it's free market, I think that's the world that we live in the United States, and it's great. And we shouldn't be the ones to stop a person who the world sees as very valuable for their set skill. To me, it's really weird to limit what they're able to receive for their skill, right? I think, you know, if you're the best professor at BYU and the whole world dials in to watch your class, and everyone just is glued to their TV watching you, I don't think people would really think twice if the university was like, hey, this person actually deserves a little more money. You know, they're really bringing a lot of eyes here. So, I mean, that's my viewpoint. Obviously, that doesn't make everyone happy. That's not going to make everyone happy. I think the BYU is in a unique situation trying to pay these players because of what you said. I don't think everyone in the – and then, I mean, you're going to – even though every other school is paying people, the church you're going to hear people at church, hey, some of – there's going to be those, you know, typical kind of Utah County rumors where people are saying, oh, some of our tithing money is going to the recruits or whatever, which none of that stuff's true, but you know how it goes. So BYU is in the most – perhaps the most unique spot in the country with the NIL stuff, and that's why I think – if he can do it right and get creative and get the approval from the church, it could go good. Yeah. But like you said, it's going to be tough. So it'll be fun to watch either way. I'll be having my popcorn ready.
No, I know you will. I know you will. No, you're not gonna dabble with filthy lucre. No, sir. No way, no how. Not going to happen. No filthy lucre over here. Hey, Jake, always a pleasure, man. A blessing. Thanks for catching up with us.
Yeah, hey, thanks, guys.
Yep, thanks for hopping on, brother.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Jake Murphy, ladies and gentlemen. Darnell, did you get all your questions out, or did I take over that
interview? No, it's good. I got what I wanted from him. And he did say, you know, he understands how it's important for the athletes who have been taken advantage of for a long time. We all agree on that. Have the opportunity to make some money off of their name and likeness. And but the problem that we're seeing, obviously, is there's nothing behind it to make sure it doesn't get out of hand, because – we knew this would happen when we heard that name, image, likeness was going to become available.
Yep.
We knew that it would be abused, and there's nobody there to monitor it to make sure that it is fair and just. And like you said, it's not breaking a law; it's breaking a rule. And you can question the
legal, an illegal rule,
which turns out, as we talked to our lawyer friend earlier in this show,
is anti-American.
It's anti-American. It's antitrust. You can't do that. You can't limit trade or limit goods that way. It just doesn't. That's not.
It's a cartel.
It's a cartel. Yeah.
It's an oligopoly. What else have we used? What other terminology, Bryce? I know we've had polls on this. Polls of the day. It's a cabal.
Cabal. There you go.
Oh, shoot. Anyway, let's go to break. Any other final thoughts, guys, as we wrap this up?
It was good. I'm glad we had Jake on.
Yeah. I'm glad you're glad we had Jake on. You going to write an article about it in the Daily Herald?
I could.
I dare you.
You dare me.
A double dog dare you. Don't make me triple dog dare you. We're going to go to break. Coming up next. What's that from, by the way? Triple dog.
That's from Christmas Story.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Shout out to you, Double D. 5 points.
Five points.
To Gryffindor. All right. Let's go to break. Coming up next, what's cooking with the Cougars? This is Cougar Sports, ESPN 960.